Is Merchant Scroll the new expressive iteration, and the Epic Storm made a legacy tier list?
Next on Eternal Turtles. Be strong. Hello and welcome to Eternal Turtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me as always, 2 weeks in a row, Phil Blackman. Phil, how's it going, man?
We're on a new streak, dude. This is unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a Saturday morning here at Casa Eternal Turtles.
Casa Eternal Turtles. You know, I think this is the earliest we've ever recorded, and it's not even all that early.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've ever recorded past midnight, so this may actually be the earliest we've ever recorded.
Yeah, I think we should get on that like 3 a.m. recording time. You know, that's when all of your best ideas come out.
Yeah, do that grind life, that hustle life.
Yeah, nothing toxic about it.
No, just like be rise and grind magic podcast.
Rise and grind, yeah, there you go. It's new. Have your coffee with Eternal Turtles.
Yeah, man. I got my Brando coffee mug here.
Nice. I got to get I want a Brando coffee mug. Can we get those on the Patreon?
Yeah. I almost didn't think to wear it, but we have merch.
Yeah, we do have merch. We do have merch. Usually it's afternoon wear though. We don't have any Eternal Turtles pajamas yet.
Yeah, no, I'm working on that. Actually, so on the topic of what's been going on with me, because that's the best segue ever.
Speaking of me.
So I'm working, doing some side work for this printing company, and one of the guys there works the screen printing press, and he offered to make me a zip up with the Eternal Turtles logo on it. So I'm like pretty psyched about that,
bro.
And if I start working for them, maybe that's something that we could offer as like a custom made product. But eventually I'll have like my classic Adidas with like Eternal Turtles on the back and maybe like on the side or something.
Dude, I just need like a thing with like Entreat the Angels like wrapping around my shoulders and like a Terminus crossbody, you know?
like a bad tattoo.
Like a
bad tattoo of like an angel or something, right?
Terminus, Entreat the Angels coming around my shoulders. That's all I need.
We talk about you know. Having being the Angels guy, but like I have an Icarus on my
you actually have an Icarus. You know, speaking of tattoos, that was what first got me into altering cards. So I have I take blood thinners every day for a blood condition I've had since I was a kid, and so I've always been a bit cautious about wanting a tattoo or about getting a tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
But I've always wanted like, you know, X number of tattoos. I would be all tatted up if I could be.
I just ran out of steam at some point. I got this whole arm done. This was like the first one, and then like I could do this, but I was like, I'm not trying to be cool anymore. So I've got like, this isn't finished. And I'm just kind of like, we're done here. We're good.
Dude,
I got robots and ray guns.
See, we could have like, we gotta get like, you know, I gotta get like, so like, a, you know, just Terminus down my arm or something. Like I've always wanted to get tattoos, but instead I found the way that I could fill that void, that craving hunger was through altars. And then it just so happened that at the time, it was back when, you know, foils were like, you know, 1,200,000 times the price of a regular card.
Yeah.
And so it was actually more affordable to alter cards. Whereas now it's like, you know, it's all a wash because all the foils cost the same thing. But it was originally because I couldn't get tats. So there you go. If anybody wants inspiration about when to alter your deck, it's when you can't do something else, it's an alternative. Anyway, speaking of tattoos, let's talk about Merchant Scroll.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Merchant Scroll. Phil, you've been playing Merchant Scroll and Miracles. What's that all about? Is this the new expressive iteration?
So let me tell you guys where I've been at, okay? Because today we're going to talk about the legacy tier list that the Epic Storm generated and put up this past week.
Yep.
And Miracles ain't even on the tier list. It's not even in the D tier. It didn't even make it into the D tier. I just got Dikembe Mutombo'd over here. All right. So let me fill you guys in on where my thought process is based on ABC theory that we have talked about a bunch.
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks beforehand, and you can all of this. What's cool about this is that it's all documented on 90s MTG. So if you actually want to see games with this shit playing out, you actually can. So for a while, I was playing Dream Cache in my 3-drop slot. And Dream Cache is a 3-mana sorcery brainstorm with the upside that you can also put the cards on the bottom instead of the top if you want to. You can't split it. You got to put both on top or both on bottom. So it's a sorcery speed brainstorm, and it's fairly anemic, but it's a 3-drop for counterbalance. And I was like, okay, so I'm still on 4 counterbalance because I can't let things go. And I need a good 3-drop, and I wanted a proactive 3-drop. I was trying things like Force of Negation, but that's reactive. Same thing with Mystical Dispute. They only were good in certain matchups as opposed to like being good with what your deck wanted. And so I was like, let me just try these off-the-wall things because none of this is working for me. So we'll try stuff.
Yeah,
so I tried Dream Cache. Yeah, let's get weird. Now, I will say, if Dream Cache was an instant, I would slam dunk it. I would slam dunk it forever tomorrow, right? But because it's a sorcery, it's still pretty anemic. But what I learned from weeks of testing, where I actually did really well, was that it greased the wheels really, really well in my Miracles list with 4 Triumph in the main. And okay, the reason for that is because it took the pressure off of Brainstorm, off of literal Brainstorm. So between 4 Brainstorm, 4 Dream Cache, and 3 Jace the Mind Sculptor, I was on 11 Brainstorm effects in my deck. So I pretty much always knew the top of my deck, and I was never stuck with a Stranded Miracle in my hand because I could always put it back on top of my deck. And I was like, okay, this is actually really good in that, like, I'm not relying on Brainstorm to both fix my hand to like line up the correct half of my deck against certain matchups, and also enable my Miracles, because in most blue cantrip shells, Brainstorm is just like fixing your hand and like helping you line things up. That way, it's like, if you have multiple white cards in your deck and those cards don't have any text against a certain matchup, you can trade them for blue cards, and now all of a sudden your deck is live, right? But Miracles is a different animal because Brainstorm also needs to set up your Miracles. It's also an enabler. And so it kind of moved me into a new space of how I was looking at ABC without Sensei's Divining Top for a long time. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm on Terminus, therefore I want Mystic Sanctuary, therefore I want Counterbalance. And then there are other times where I'm like, okay, I'm going to focus on being a Counterbalance list, so I want Counterbalance, therefore I want Mystic Sanctuary, therefore I want Thwart. And I'm like, okay, here are my structures, and each one of them is solid, given that I have the tools to make the actual plan A sufficient, yeah, right? But part of that means that I have to, for a Terminus, I need to be able to put stuff back on top. For Counterbalance, I need to put stuff back on top. And then once I moved into 4 Triumphs in the main, I was like, okay, now I really need to do that, because you don't always have access to 2 mana up when you want to slam a threat. It's different from when, you know, Terminus, for the most part, if you can fire it off for a Miracle, you're always doing it, because you can always rebuy it with Mystic Sanctuary, and cleaning the board is always something you're interested in doing.
Yeah.
Whereas with Triumph, that's not always the case. You don't always want a Tarmogoyf on the table. Sometimes you do, but sometimes you're not in a position to pivot to put a Tarmogoyf, so you have to draw it so you can deploy your other things, and now it's stuck in your hand. And so what I found was Brainstorm is unique in Miracles in that it can slot into the ABC theory, where I don't think it can in other decks. Like, there's no other deck where you're like, oh yeah, I want Minsk and Boo, therefore I want Brainstorm. You know, like, the top of the deck is not relevant for your deck to function the way that it is for Miracles, because
the only deck I can think of that cares that much about it as well is the new like show and tell decks that are playing Vesuvian Drifter.
Right. And that's a case where like that zone matters. And so this sort of like, you know, has opened my eyes a little bit more. It's like expanded my horizons to a degree. Like, you know, even though we taught this theory of ABC, it's like, you know, we still learn. And for a long time in areas that I struggled, I always felt like Brainstorm was overheated. Like, there was too much pressure on Brainstorm to do too much. And so I'd constantly be Mystic Sanctuarying for Brainstorm because I just needed more Brainstorms. And then when I tried Dream Cache, and I was like, oh, I actually just need 8 Brainstorms. I actually just want more of this effect. When I tried Dream Cache, I was like, okay. But then when it was 3-drop for Counterbalance, which I enjoyed, but it's still slow. 3-drop mana sorcery Brainstorm that doesn't affect the board is still slow, even though it greased the wheels. So I was like, what other things can I do? So I dipped into Merchant Scroll this past week. For Merchant Scroll, obviously, because it's, you can find Brainstorms, but then you can also get tutor packages. Like, it now means that I have Thwart plus however many Mystics Merchant Scrolls I have, so I can really lock in the hooks. I get that this is a dedicated deck that only I play, that you guys are getting a full rundown on, that nobody, you're never going to run into this. Nobody's ever going to sit down across the table.
There's two or three guys in the Discord. You can join the Discord if you're a Miracles player and join in on that information. Join the Discord anyways. We talk about magic. Yeah,
join the Discord anyways. So what I did was I swapped 4 Dream Cache for a Force of Negation, an Archmage's Charm to test, and then 2 Merchant Scroll. So Merchant Scroll primarily is there to be additional Brainstorms, but it also means that in the times where I need Counterbalance plus 3-drop, I'll have access to searching up 3-drops. And then the two 3-drops do different things in different matchups. So they're both counter spells, but one is for fast matchups, one is for grindy matchups. Yeah. So you can just Merchant Scroll, show your opponent a Force of Will, and if they can't beat a Force of Will, then the game slows down. And then same thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Quick segue, Phil, about all of this. While you're doing all these changes and whatnot, you're doing them on Moxfield.com. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, they are all on Moxfield.
Yeah, great news about Moxfield.com. We are once again sponsored by Moxfield.com, one of the greatest deck building websites of all time. If not the best greatest deck building website of all time.
Isn't it the only deck building website?
Yeah. Sure, yeah, Harry and John, a couple months ago, they paused all sponsorships because they were going like full time into just making Moxfield, quitting their jobs and like making that a thing. And now they're at a point where they've started up sponsorships again, which is amazing because they've tapped us to do sponsorships for it. And it's literally the place we go to build decks. So I'm super proud that to be sponsored by them. But on top of that, I'm really proud of my friends for making this work and like, you know, basically going out on their own and, you know, making a whole business model out of making decks for Magic, you know.
And I'm happy that it spiked so fast. Like it, the trajectory of like what, when I knew nothing about Moxfield to now it's the only thing that I use,
yeah,
was like very steep.
It's ubiquitous now. Like everyone you talk to has like, oh yeah, my Moxfield account. Here's everything. You know, like it's almost like your Magic business card, you know?
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. So yeah. They're back. We're back on board with them. They're great. And yeah, go check it out.
Yeah. Check out Moxfield. So continuing on talking about your many tiered miracles list.
Yeah, so essentially what I realized was when I moved over to Merchant Scroll, I was like, okay, well, Merchant Scroll can find Brainstorm, but then I can also find other answers or threats based on a given matchup, particularly out of the board. Like I was able to trim Hydro Blasts because I can tutor for them now in matchups where you want a Hydro Blast. But more specifically, I was like, okay, well, if I'm paying 3 mana for a Brainstorm, then that's kind of the same as paying 2 mana for a Merchant Scroll with a Brainstorm up front, because an instant speed Brainstorm with a counterbalance is way better than a sorcery speed Brainstorm where you have to just like lock out one part of the curve for a turn.
Yeah.
So essentially the way that it reconfigured how I thought about the theory with this particular archetype was I was like, well, I want counterbalance, therefore I want Brainstorm, therefore I want Merchant Scroll. And so like that sort of like pieced it together. And then Merchant Scroll has like the addendums of like, that's where you reach into Thwart and you reach into like other instant blue instants to like fill out the package. But it's a light package. I only played two copies, but it was really good the whole time that I played it. It did exactly what I wanted to do, where it was getting the more Brainstorms. Like you look at a map between the number of Brainstorms that you cast every match, and the ones where you cast more Brainstorms are the ones where you win more. Right, like
yeah,
that's probably, I mean,
that is Legacy Magic Gathering in a nutshell.
Legacy actually, Magic, right? Gathering, like just have what you need more often. But it also the notion also of getting multiple free counter spells out of your deck between Force of Will, Force of Negation, and Thwart means that like you can proactively counter something. And in the times where you have multiple Mystic Sanctuaries on the table, being able to tutor for the Thwart shows your opponent either they can't move, or if they do, you're just going to get a bunch of mystical tutors back. And that's the cool thing. Like the tech that I've always liked about Thwart is that it never really mattered if you countered their spell, because you picked up mystical tutors. And that's really what mattered. Mm-hmm. Like the damage is already done before we're done fighting over the stack, you know?
Yeah, in an attrition game, you're just running over people.
Yeah, so it's like once you get to that point where, you know, anytime I Merchant Scrolled for a Thwart, the hooks were locked in. Like I was like, this game's over. You know, we could be playing for a while, but the game's over. So it sort of opened my eyes to like repositioning of certain cards on my theory and my deck. And so it's just an example of like even somebody who's been in the shit forever. Like I've been thinking through this theory on this particular archetype for what, since
Miracles came out, right?
Since Miracles existed, yeah, since Innistrad, whenever that was, 2016, whatever. So
2012, my friend. 2012.
Oh yeah, I'm thinking of when Top Got Banned. Yeah, 2012. So like over a decade, I've been thinking about like this exact theory since Miracles came out till now. And even though it went through a banning, only now am I actually thinking, oh, I should actually be visualizing Brainstorm as part of this structure.
Yeah.
Whereas I never did before because you never needed to. You had top, you were trying to figure, and then everybody's like always trying to figure out other tools. And I was like, what if we just had 8 Brainstorms and it like eased up? And now it's like, yeah, it's a soft lock the whole time with counterbalance instead of a hard lock like it is with top, but like it's way better than it's way closer than it was right now. Speaking of, I don't think Miracles is S tier, but I do think it deserves to be on the tier list.
On the tier list, I agree. But before we move to the tier list, I want to ask you one simple question, Phil. I'm a Daze Mage, you know that. I've been casting days since Nemesis, you know, that was my steez. But we have a rule. There's a saying us days mages have, which is never pay for days. How do you feel about that statement for Thwart?
Never. What do you mean?
Never pay for it. You should never pay mana for this spell.
The only time I've ever, I have paid mana for it, but I imagine it's in the similar times when somebody has decided to pay mana for days. It's very rare. It's very rare. But I have done it in that, like, if I have...
To cast days. You should always pay mana to stop your opponent from casting days.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, if I'm sitting there on four lands and I don't fear days, right? I'm not playing against the days deck, but I don't have any sanctuaries on the table and we haven't bridged through to the late game yet, I'll pay for mana. Because, you know, ultimately the loop is to... your second or third Mystic Sanctuary picks up the Thwart, so you can always keep the chain going. But if I don't want to set myself back to the Stone Age in those positions, but it's rare that comes up because it's a one of, and if you have it, you're probably, if you're in the seat where you have both the Thwart and four open mana and nothing else going on the table, that means that you've probably Terminus'd at some point prior to this event happening. And
you need that presence.
If I spend four mana to counter your spell, I'm probably so far ahead that the game's over already. So, you know, we can scoop that up. But, like,
fair enough.
If for the most part, it's like I'm never paying mana for it because I actively want to pick up sanctuaries. You know, like, on average, I'm picking up two Mystic Sanctuaries every time, for sure.
Yeah, I think the important part there in the never pay for days is never pay to cast days is what I meant.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't want people to think it. I'm saying just let people daze you even if you have open mana.
Yeah, never pay for it.
Never pay for days.
At that point,
spell be countered.
So in other words, always tap out. Just always, always
constantly
tap out.
I also stand by that.
Always tap out.
But So let's talk about this tier list. The Epic Storm, which we were often all of our old school and pre-modern content is often sponsored by.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We should say that this is the epicstorm.com that made a tier list for the Legacy format.
Shout out to Alex McKinley here.
This was released on May 12th, so it's a very recent list.
Yes.
It is. When you're listening to this, it's May 22nd, so May 12th was 10 days ago for you all.
Yeah.
And let's get into it.
Yeah, it's May 22nd. That's right. And we're recording on May 20th, so, you know, anything could happen in 2 days, right?
Well, we got some challenges, but I don't think anything's going to shift from this list. Except maybe Miracles actually, you know, finally get some respect.
Finally being on the board. So let's talk about the tiers here. S tier, there are no decks in S tier, which I appreciate and I sort of agree with. A tier, 8 cast, Cephalid Breakfast, Jeskai Control, Reanimator. B tier.
All right, so let's talk. You want to talk about lists, or you want to just run all the way down? It's going
to
be hard.
Let's go all the way down because it's important to understand where everything is at right now, and then from there, you know, we can discuss why things are where they are. B tier is Death and Taxes, Doomsday, Elves, Blue Zenith, Initiative, Painter, Blue Red Delver, and Sneak and Show. C tier is Death Shadow, Green White Depths, Hammer Time, Maverick, Moon Stompy, Oops All Spells, The Epic Gamble, The Epic Storm. Then D tier is Ad Nauseam Tendrils, Belcher, Black Saga Storm, Cloud Post Dredge, Esper Vial, Goblins, Hogak, and Lands.
So let's talk quickly about the methodology. The S tier is the dominant deck that's always going to show up in the top eight. Yep. The A tiers are consistently in the top eight of challenges. They're not necessarily going to win it every time, but they're likeliest to show up. The B tier strategies are ones that will make it into the upper echelons of an event, but maybe not the top eights. So Alex here wrote strategies that will not make challenge top eights due to either low power or lower play rate, but still a solid deck. And then C tier are often specialist decks. So if they show up, it's because the specialist is usually the one piloting them. And then the D tier archetypes are the ones that are in the format that you're potentially going to run into, but they're underpowered and are unlikely to actually see any tournament success.
I think a good example of like a C tier list is Tom Ross playing Infect.
Yeah, I mean, they themselves, this is the Epic Storm, and the Epic Storm tier list put the Epic Storm in C tier.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So
yeah,
that's an example of like,
if you see Bryant Cook across from you, then it becomes that C tier list is dangerous.
Yeah, it's also that like the most of the people who are dedicated to the evolutions of those kinds of decks that are like very nuanced and need very specific sideboard strategies against a very specific metagame. Yeah. So it's not broad strokes, you know. Those are usually going to be piloted by specialists because you have to be dedicated to those kinds of shells. So, yeah. But as we jump in, there is one thing that to chat through real quick is that there are some archetypes in here that don't have standard options. Like when I look at Jeskai Control, my mind branches into like 3 to 5 lists.
Yeah, like I was like, is that just Miracles?
Like when I see Cephalid Breakfast, it also like I branch into two different branches. Like I know that there are Stoneforge breakfast decks, and then there are Baleful Strix breakfast decks. And there's some variation in like the combo stuff is all the same, but the additional shell is different, and they're gonna be better situated against different matchups. Like if you're on Baleful Strix versus Stoneforge Mystic, you're gonna be better against Delver decks, right? In breakfast, because you'll have a little bit more of a speed bump on your way to getting through development to your combo. So like that might change numbers based on a metagame. So there is nothing referenced between variations between those lists. So grain of salt here if we just talk about different styles of decks within the archetype, but those archetypes are a little bit more far reaching. Whereas like for the most part, you have two versions of Acast. You have Painter Acast and regular Psy Master Thopterist Acast. Both are legitimate.
Well, I think before we even get into everything, right? Well, get into each like area. What's your biggest takeaway here? Look, like, what's the thing that you disagree with the most? I should say here. Minus Miracles being on the list. Like, what in this tier list do you kind of disagree with the most?
I think when it says Painter, I assume they mean Red Painter.
Yeah,
I know that there's Red Painter and Blue Painter. Blue Painter is just an extension of 8-cast.
Yeah,
but the thing is that all of those are Urza Saga decks, and you could have removed a bunch of decks and just put Urza Saga A tier.
Yeah,
you know, like in my mind, there's a bunch of decks that exist solely on the power level of Urza Saga, and.
Well, that would put Moon Stompy in a weird spot because that's a C tier list.
I mean, these top lists like. If they didn't have Urza Saga, they bumped down multiple tiers.
Yeah.
Like Urza Saga's power is worth like X number of tiers by itself. Yeah. And so I personally think that Red Painter should also be up. I think that the Urza Saga decks are the most powerful decks in the format because all of their cannons are so contained that they really have a lot of flexibility. You know, I think that I get that they stay confined to one color because they want Ancient Tomb and Urza Saga, and that's a lot of colorless lands. But the fact that they have like naturally built in threats through counter magic, plus tutors for answers to combat opposing decks, and then one deck is an 8 Force of Will deck, another deck is a 7 Red Blast deck. So depending on the meta, they're gonna change. But I would put Painter and 8-cast up higher, but I would do that only because I think Urza Saga is such a dominant card against so many decks.
Yeah.
The way that I try to think about how one would combat them, you have to combat them at Urza Saga first, you know? So like, if you don't have the tools to beat Urza Saga, it doesn't matter what's around it. It's going to beat you anyway. It's similar to old Stompy decks before we had Prismatic Ending and, you know, additional and Besaidu and like additional ways to deal with Chalice.
Yeah.
It's like, if you didn't have ways to beat Chalice, you would just be dead to the turn one Chalice.
Yep.
You know? And it feels very similar to me in that vein where it's like at that time, Chalice decks were, you know, in A tier or whatever, right? But they were really on the A tier because there weren't really very good main deckable answers to Chalice, and it would just cold a bunch of decks. The rest of the stuff around it didn't matter. Yeah. But it's like, if you couldn't beat Chalice, then you were dead, and that was good enough to like win just a good chunk of matches. And so I think that it's in a similar space, except Urza Saga is just better.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think my biggest like disagree here is Blue Red Delver not being A tier. Like I truly think that it still is A tier. I don't think it's overpowered. I don't think it's like S tier. I don't think we need bannings, you know, but I definitely don't think that it's a B tier deck list.
Do you
but
think
maybe,
also...
maybe the, you know, I think what's in Alex's head here is that that deck is so ubiquitously played that it hits the top eight that constantly just through sheer numbers.
I also think that it's possible that it's going through its post-ban dip like it always does, where
the fall of the Roman Empire, yeah,
where it's figuring itself out still, right? Like there are some people that were playing like moving into green for like Tarmogoyf and Minskin Boo, and then there were other people that were moving into like more aggressive, like, you know, essentially like a blue red burn deck,
just throwing
and
more velocity into the deck, yeah.
And now like there was times where people where we were on like the predict shell and we wanted to go longer still, and now people are experimenting with Invasion of Tarkir and Fairy Sprite Dragon,
yeah,
to just like max out on dragons, and now you're sort of like this blue red aggressive dragons deck,
blue red
like,
dragons, man.
Which was showing up relatively well, and people are like, oh yeah, because you have the chain lightning trick with your own battle, because you control the battle, so you can chain lightning, target the battle, which you control, so you can then pay two more red to chain something else. So it's a three mana way to like both get a battle and kill something. And it's like people are getting cute, right? Like they're trying new things. And I think as long as we're in that sort of experimental space, and the thing is that like when you play those sorts of cards, you have to change how you navigate different matchups with that style of deck, right? Are you a more aggressive Delver or are you a more controlling Delver? That's going to dictate how you decide which role you are in given circumstances. And so similar to Jeskai Control, there's a couple of varieties of blue-red Delver that exist right now. It's like, are you dragon blue-red or are you burn blue-red? Are you control blue-red? You know, like those slots that make up the difference of like, if you overcome the first threat plus days, like if you get any part up through development, that's the next part of the deck that you have to face. And so when Delver figures itself out, right, when there is a new stock Delver that everybody's like, this is the best, let's tune this, let's refine to make sure we can beat the metagame, no doubt it's going to hop back up a tier, right?
Fair enough. I think that's a fine I'll concede my point to you on that.
I think you and I were making the same point. I was just helping you. I was just helping detail it a little bit more.
I think it's fair to say that Delver could be having its rebuilding year, right? Like it's gonna be tier one again, or a tier again, but maybe right now it's a minus tier, you know. There's a tier in between these two things, right?
Let's talk quick about Reanimator. I just want to say it to all the Reanimator players out there, Atraxa is this new shiny toy, man. It's this new wonderful shiny toy, and y'all want to play it, and you keep casting it, and it opens itself up to so... I can't tell you how many games against Reanimator I 100% should have lost. But I won because Dressdown had text. Like, at no point... If you cast a reanimation spell and I say resolves, but I have a Dressdown in play...
And then you slam a Dressdown, yeah.
Come on. And the thing is that, like... Atraxa is good. Don't get me wrong. It's a good card. It'll be a fatty in Legacy for a very long time. It does a lot of different things that a lot of decks want. You should still be Gristlebranding. Just fucking get him dead if you're reanimating. If you're playing reanimating,
if you're not casting Gristlebrand first, like unless like you happen to have Atraxa in your hand and that's the easiest target, like Gristlebrand's still the best card to be reanimating.
Look, man, I get it. You've been doing Grizzlebrand since 2012, and at no point during any of that time have you ever felt anything, because Grizzlebrand just does it all in a way that is so nonsensically boring.
I mean, I appreciate
boring.
That people want to tie one hand behind their back and then
punch
in the eye.
I'm saying, look. I've been playing Miracles for the same amount of time that Reanimator players have been able to play with Grizzlebrand, right? Like, you know, Miracles and Grizzlebrand came out in the same set. I get it.
Like
I get
peanut butter
being dedicated
and
to the shell.
Tar.
And I get that, like, over time, when you do the same thing over and over and over again and there's no interaction, you spent, you know, X hours at your local FNM and all you did was masturbate. I get it. You want to feel something different.
Yeah, dude.
But if you want to win games, just put Grizzlebrand into play. It's always going... It will always be the best thing. It will always be the best thing. In order for them... Like, when they printed Atraxa and we're like, holy shit, this card's really good. It does a lot. It does all the colors. it has a huge effect. All yeah. the abilities on it are relevant. You know? You can pitch it to literally anything you want because it's all the colors, and it's going to reload your hand, and it's going to give essentially two to you for all action.
Yeah,
it's not close. Quizzle Brand is still better. It's yeah. still better. Like, the only times that I've seen Atraxa be better was like against the initiative when you're on turn 7, and the fact that it's a flying, lifelinking death toucher that has vigilance so you can both attack and block to stabilize, that's the only time
yeah.
where I've seen, okay, this card would have been better here than Grizzlebrand would. But Grizzlebrand just ends the game on the spot. So, long-winded way of saying Grizzlebrand is still the S tier of targets.
We could, this deck could be S tier if you guys weren't friggin' trying to put a trap in play the whole damn time.
Dude, like, here's the thing. Definitely still play Atraxa against me. Don't play Grizzlebrand against me, but play a Grizzlebrand against everybody else.
the other decks on the A list, I don't know enough about Cephalid Breakfast, honestly, to make a judgment call about that.
I do. I can chat to it a little bit.
I've really never played against the deck ever. Like, and I'm really, it still like feels like a meme to me.
You want to know where it's really good is because it's an A plus B combo deck, and it's the package itself isn't all that tight, right? You need three Narc Amoeba, you need a Dread Return, you need the Thassa's Oracle. Like, five cards is you know, it's not the tightest list in the world. But the combo itself is extremely tight and doesn't require timing restriction. So you're looking to go Nobot. So you against opposing combo decks where they're not playing interaction that fucks with you, you can just go turn one, turn two, kill you, right? So it's got a good combo game. But because it's an Urza Saga deck, it can also grind. So, and because a lot of the shell of the combo itself, you know, Cephalid plus Shuko or Nomads, because that's it, and then you just need the five cards to combo out, the rest of the deck is flexible. And the rest of the deck,
you can just kind of good... you can have those five cards in your deck and then just go from there, right?
It becomes just a good blue-white X deck. So it's like, you know, when we were talking before where it's like you could play Stoneforge Mystic or Baleful Strix, it's like, there's flexibility. And so like, it's not like Storm where you have to dedicate the entire list. It's not like Reanimator where you have to dedicate the entire list. There is some mid-range game that you can play so that if you want to move away from the combo, you can.
The best thing I can... Again, like I said, I've never really played against this deck. The best way I can compare it in my head is like Food Chain.
Yes, but it's better. It's better because it's tighter and you don't have to play bad cards. Like, Food Chain requires you to play a bunch of bad cards in addition to the combo piece.
Got it.
Where... Cephalid Breakfast just doesn't ask that of you.
It's just asking for way less commitment as far as the combo is concerned as well.
It asks you for your deck is just less absorbed by a combo, so you don't have as many hands where you're like, well, I have this Food Chain and nothing to go with it, so it's just blank, and I have to, you know, it's like, well, I have this Mist Hollow Griffin that I can't exile yet, so it's just a 4-mana 3/3 that sucks. Yeah. You know, it's like you run into those situations way less because your combo pieces are just like cheap creatures that have relevant text. And also, like, there are positions too where it's like, if you're on the Stoneforge Mystic build, right, and you go turn one Nomads, turn two Stoneforge Mystic, well, now Bolt can't get rid of your Stoneforge, right? So one of your combo pieces is protecting your non-combo game plan against certain matchups, and you can navigate in those positions, right? Like, it affects, like, the Nomads in that position functions as a Mother of Runes. And if they don't have two pieces of removal, then they're just going to get bodied by the Cauldra, you know, which is something that, like, other combo decks don't have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and there are like ways where your Cephalid Illusionist is also relevant. Like, let's say you ponder a Brainstorm and you have one card, but then you want to clear the chafe. You can use something if you have something to target your, even if you're not ready to go off, you can target your Cephalid Illusionist to mill cards to clear the top of your deck. Like, there's a lot of, like, incidental things that do add up over time, again, in a lot of matchups to, like, improve your consistency. Yeah. On top of the fact that it is a creature combo deck, so it doesn't have to worry about certain interaction that a lot of things have. Like
Force of Negation, for example.
Right, Force of Negation, for example. And the other side of it is that it has, because it's a creature combo deck, think of it similar to Elves, it has a legitimate beatdown plan. Like, if somebody's playing where they really fear the combo, they're just going to get beat down by constructs because it's an Urza Saga deck. They're going to, you know, if you're on the Stone Forest Mystic package, you can start getting aggro. Like, you can force your opponent to have to do different things. So another example of something that we've talked about before, Cephalid Breakfast is very good at controlling the narrative.
Yeah.
And it's a deck that can pivot and control the narrative really well. And that's why I think it's very consistent. And it was, I think it's actually lost a couple beats since Initiative got hit, because it was very good against Initiative, because Initiative did not interact with it fast enough in a meaningful way enough, because it's a creature combo deck. So all of their hate that they had to make it so that, you know, Storm could never do anything, it doesn't matter for them, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, your combo is more or less uncounterable if you want it to be. So their Urza Saga package often includes an Aether Vial, which helps them flash in their threat uncounterably, because you got the Aether Vial uncounterably, or you can tutor up the Shuko uncounterably, or you can step through to get your combo piece and they can't interact with that.
Yeah.
Also, if they play Graveyard Hate, which means that you can't Dread Return to combo, well, you can just step through to get your Thassa's Oracle out of your deck, and mill your whole deck, and then cast it.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
So,
yeah.
Like, there are ways to navigate around the hate that you want. So it's extremely flexible. And that's why it's so good. It's like the ways that you hate it out, it's, there isn't a hard way to hate it the same way that there is for other combo decks, because a good breakfast pilot can just navigate around it if they know that that's what you're on. If they know you're on Leyline, they're going to be like, no worries, pivot. I have stepped through for Thassa's Oracle and I can just kill you that way. Or I'll just try and beat you down first, make you expend resources, and then kill you. Or I have these combo pieces that may not be ready to combo off, but are giving me incidental value along the way. And they're all cheap.
Or I'll just attack you with Cauldra for four turns, you know? That's fine too, right?
The fact that it's a combo deck, but it's not a dedicated combo deck. Like, it doesn't have to combo to win. And that's why it's so good. It's very much like Acast Painter, right? If you're Acast Painter, you can incidentally win through the combo. And a lot of the times when they're not ready for it, you just get to combo them out. But you don't have to. You could just construct beat down them, right? It's so hard to fight on multiple axes against a combo deck that can outright kill you, so you need to respect it. But then also just beat you down.
We're going to name this segment 8 Godless Minutes on Cephalid Breakfast.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things where it's like your Urza Sagas in Cephalid Breakfast are way more anemic than they are in 8-cast. But at the same time, it's still going to produce 6 power uncounterable. And if you're not prepared to deal with that on top of fighting over the combo, you just die to it. That's why it's very good.
So looking at the rest of the A tier, 8-cast, I agree with. Jeskai Control, which is, like you were saying yesterday, is just Narset and Teferi, like as a deck, and, you know, throw in a bunch of control cards.
I think a part of it is too, is like people are unprepared for certain variations of Jeskai Control. You know, like when Ozzy won with 4 Yuta in his deck for Fairy Mastermind.
Yeah.
I imagine a lot of the times where that caught people, they weren't expecting it, right? And he was the first person to do that in a challenge. And then it's sort of like Hull Breacher, right? It's like, once you are aware that you need to be, you need to navigate around those things, you navigate around it, and then it's way less threatening.
Yeah.
If you were to tell me which Jeskai Control deck is the one that's going to put up the most numbers against a field like this, I would assume it's the Teferi Narset deck. With a single Days Undoing or something like that, where at that point you're Prison Control, and against the rest of the tiers, it's like, well, Teferi means that you can only function at instant speed, so you're not, like, you know, we're gonna have a harder time comboing off against that when, you know, you can't fight over my stuff. And then Narset shuts down Acast in a meaningful way that they have to fight over it, and it also can blank, you know, if you can stymie your Grizzlebrand until then. Like, the static abilities on those cards are really backbreaking, and so that's what I would assume is the Jeskai Control that we're putting here. But
yeah. All right. So then in the B tier, we've got Death and Taxes, Doomsday, Elves, Blue Zenith, Initiative, Painter, Blue Red Delver, and Sneak and Show. I haven't seen Sneak and Show in the longest time until, like, recently I've seen some rumblings about the Vesuvan Drifter Sneak and Show deck.
I haven't even seen that one yet, but it sounds cool.
Yeah. Basically, you're just like, it's another show and tell. And then that turns Brainstorm into like this massive, like, okay, like, maybe I need to remove their 3-drop, which is basically a show and tell, right? It's like a creature version of show and tell. You're casting show and tell, and this thing is in play, and next turn you're probably going to die, right? Like,
it is kind of cool that it slots into blue green. And I remember when people were playing Eureka for blue green, but, like, you know, Doomsday plays Personal Tutor for Doomsday, Maybe Show and Tell is just like, all right, instead of personal tutor worldly, for Doomsday, we're just going to play, you know, some of the green mystical tutors to put a creature on top. And that's tutors, finding a combo piece. Yeah. And then you can kill that one.
I think also, there's another green one. I forget what that one is. It might just actually still be worldly tutor.
One thing to keep in mind, too, for Vesuvian Drifter is it's each combat, not just yours. So if you have a Vesuvian Drifter and your opponent's trying to attack you, you can reveal, become a fatty, and potentially might make a big block. So don't be the person that falls for that.
Yeah, if your opponent like attacks you and you're like, oh, look at that, it's Grizzlebrand, I'll just block.
And draw seven.
Yeah.
I'm going to gain seven and draw seven, yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But I think Death and Taxes is in the right spot. I think Doomsday, it's funny that I like, you know, we talk a lot about bias, and like you and I are very biased in our deck. Shout out to the Epic Storm for like taking the Epic Storm, putting it at C tier, and putting Doomsday in the B tier. That shows a lot of growth.
Yeah, I mean the way that these guys the way that Alex really laid it down with his methodology, you know, I mean he's it's pretty consistent. I'm curious as to like if he was just looking over challenges and that's how he got to this list, because like I mean I see Hammer Time enough, but I'm surprised that it's significant enough that it can actually get tiered, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the wild thing for me is like, if we look at the C tier, like Death Shadow, that's exactly where I would expect Death Shadow to be, is like, you know, if you get a pilot that like knows Death Shadow, like that's all these decks are decks that like, if the pilot knows what they're doing, they're a menace. You know, if you see someone turn one, cycle a Street Wraith, and they look like they know what they're doing, that is a coin flip game. Like anything goes, you know? If you see someone start their Oops All Spell things, like anybody who's playing Oops All Spells is either a straight up genius or just like, you know, like playing with like Legos, you know? It's like, it's one or the other. Like you just like never know what you're going to get. But when you get someone who knows that deck, you're like, oh, great.
You want to know like what this is also highlighting for me that isn't on here is there's no, I assume that it's Blue Zenith is what it's been packaged into, but there's no Uro Minskinbu deck.
Yeah, there's I think that's what Blue Zenith is. Yeah.
Yeah, and because if I were to add four color somewhere on this list, I'd probably put it in the B tier, only because people are also still trying to figure that deck out after post expressive iteration ban.
Yeah.
But that shell, like, you know, we spent, you know, a half hour talking about miracles today, but like if you sit across from a control deck, you're going to be going against like the variations of Jeskai control or the variations of four color. But both of those decks through development are just white spell decks, right? We're hoping, like, if you sleeve up my style of miracles or if you sleeve up a Jeskai control or a four color control, the first thing that you have to do when you do that is you assume that your white cards will have text in most of your matchups. Yeah. So you're like, I need to be able to line up Swords to Plowshares and Prismatic Ending in order for me to do anything game one. And if you walk into a format that is just, your white cards just do not matter in that way, then you will not do well. Like the baseline through development is your white cards need to have text. So,
the big cards that this deck looks like it picked up are like Thalia and the Gitrog Monster.
Okay, so that if that's what we're talking about with Blue Zenith, then it's just an entirely different archetype.
Yeah, yeah. This is basically Maverick. Like you're looking at like Dryad Arbor, Birds of Paradise, Collector Oof, Ice Fang Quotal, Endurance, Excavator.
So, one of the things that it's like, if you look at this list, I definitely would be putting Uro and Minskinbu dot deck with maybe probably Staff of the Storyteller at this point is really where people are shifting to.
A lot of decks are playing like Gris the Hungertide or like Teferi instead of
off of your Green Sun.
Yeah.
I would just put that in the B tier. I would still be prepared for it. Like that is a style of deck that it just speaks to a lot of players. Like people will cast Uro and Minks against you. So like if you go
I'm
into
afraid
a major...
of every Maverick player, even now that I'm on a deck that doesn't care if you're just a fair deck,
you just have to care about green white depths. Yeah. I think that like, I know that SCG Baltimore is coming up and there's a Legacy 10K happening and that thing, if you walk into that room, there will be plenty of players casting Uro and Minskinbu in the same deck. And so, you know, looking at this tier list, if you don't pay any respect to that archetype, I think you might get bodied by it. So just be mindful.
Plan? Are you thinking about going to Baltimore?
Yeah, I'm not confirmed yet, but I'm going to try to go for sure. I think it's
I'd like
June
to go. I just want to be like a little more secure with like what's going on with my life.
Yeah, I think that we have
the funds. Thanks to our Patreon supporters, we have the funds to like be like, okay, we can afford to go down to Baltimore and like cover the event and play.
So make some content. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the only downside is that
a good use of our Patreon money.
The only downside is that Baltimore sucks. Not like Baltimore, like, hey, Baltimoreans. I'm not like trying to come at you. I mean, like,
I love it. I love that town, man. I have my spot.
When I say Baltimore sucks, I don't mean like, oh, the city is trash. I mean like the convention in which they do things is not conducive to making it an easy weekend, in that like the parking is really pricey. The situation of like hotels versus where the convention is.
There's not a good mass transit system to get down there from, I live in Philly, which is like an hour and a half away from Baltimore. You would think that like I could just hop on a train and get there, but like it's a drive. Yeah. Like I've got to match up with folks to drive there.
Baltimore is a city. It's a city doing city stuff, and that's cool. Like I live in New York. I mean that like it's not the most conducive to big events, or at least the last time I went, I remember thinking like, man, I paid like way more just for like the stuff outside the convention center to like be able to go on the trip. You know what I mean?
Yeah. For me, it's like me, Dustin, Higby, Tim, we all go like and get the literal same hotel room that is like a family sized hotel room that has like a kid's room that has an Xbox in it, which we've never turned on, and a big like mural of a dog and bunk beds. And I always get the top bunk.
There you go. Yeah.
And
you deserve to be in the top bracket.
Yeah. And then we go to like, there's like this little, like the best way I could put it is like Disney at night, like whatever Pleasure Island kind of spot that has like a bunch of different bars. There's like the club bar, the German beer hall, the like pub hangout. And the pub hangout has karaoke. So that's like our nighttime thing. We go there and like we do that and hang out. So I love going to Baltimore. It's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I definitely hope to go and terminus every person who sits across the table from me. So, you know, let us pray.
Yeah, I think that would be a blast. But then also the next week I have like a wedding. So there's like, that's a lot of travel for me.
It's a lot of travel, yeah.
But, you know, I've been leaving my house more often because I'm actually like going to, you know, like, hopefully this gig works out. I have a couple other irons in the forge as far as what my next steps are as far as jobs are concerned. If anyone out there has some openings for a project manager, I ain't too proud to use the podcast as a platform.
Use the platform, man.
Find a new job. So
community sticks together, dude.
Yeah, man.
I'll tell you, like I have never gotten it in my entire life. I have never gotten a job through my own like submitting to a job.
Yeah, it's who you know. Yeah.
It's always been who I know.
The nepotism is huge. And right now, everyone is my uncle.
of the four like major jobs that I've had since, you know, graduating from college over a decade ago, I've had four distinct, like, these were jobs that could be full on careers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
you're not even including the one that I gave you.
No. One of them came from my alma mater, right? Like the company that hired me was owned by guys that like came from Syracuse or went to Syracuse. So like I had the in through them because they were like, oh, you're a Syracuse guy. Yeah, come on in.
Yeah.
Every other one was because I knew people, and two of them were because of people who I knew through magic that put it in for me. So use the platform, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, you know, hit us through the Discord if you have job openings. We're still doing the get Zach to Pac-Man suits / get Zach to Barcelona Patreon tiers. So we'll see about that stuff. You know, if you want to support us via Patreon, that's awesome. What else? Check out our Legacy 101 content. Just literally watching the content, liking and subscribing is like all I ask. You know, like that's the bare minimum. Is like hit the like button if you guys got any value out of our content. If you do get value out of our content, you know, share it, you know, and like click the upvote button on Reddit. That's like the bare minimum, and everyone's doing a great job with that. We've been I was showing the guys at Moxfield since they were talking to me about, you know, a sponsorship, and I was like, yeah, look at this chart. We're up over the last 90 days. We're up 889% as far as views are concerned, which is,
it's pretty good percentage.
Wild, you know, like
pretty good percentage, right?
You know, we a couple episodes ago we were talking about how we are currently at 600. We just hit 600 views. This was 12 days ago. you know, or 600 subscribers, I should say. We're up to 650 right now, which is amazing too. So, you know, I really appreciate the community just stepping up and being like, yeah, like we're going to subscribe to the channel. You know, like that's the cool. It's just wild to see the cast grow like this. And it's incredibly humbling to kind of, you know, be like part of the community, you know?
I don't know how else to interpret all of that growth other than that everybody like me is a thwart truther. I don't know how else I'm supposed to interpret this.
You're the Marjorie Taylor Greene of thwart?
Oh, God, no. God, no. At least I think what I'm saying has some kind of logical sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how everyone else views you.
Just oh, shit.
A bullhorn yelling thwart is good.
Fuck, man. Just like,
that'll
you
be
know.
That'll be the thumbnail for this one. Just like you on a bullhorn. We could Photoshop your face onto Marjorie Taylor
Greene. Oh, God. Right? Oh, my God. Please kill me. Please end my life.
Jesus Christ. But anyhow, I think, you know, I like this tier list. I appreciate that, like, it seems relatively unbiased. And it's also a good spot to, like, just be like, hey, like, that's a good metagame to, like, look at for Baltimore. I'm very interested to see what Baltimore yields as far as deck breakdowns and stuff. So I'm sure.
The thing too is that like that format is different. I imagine that a lot of this stuff is taken from challenges and whatnot. I mean, specifically like the methodology refers to challenges, and the online metagame is different from the paper metagame.
It is.
There are just a lot of tools that paper
for many reasons.
That,
for many one reasons, of them being, you know, all the cards aren't there, but the other one being like, you know, guys like me will just play like Death Shadow splashing green, you know, like. Just because that's fun, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm interested to see what how this breaks up over the next couple of weeks and how we feel about this going forward. But I think it's a solid start as far as places to look for you know, your meta breakdown.
Yeah, this would be a cool thing to reference, like as other decks that, you know, were hit by the ban sort of like settle in and change according to the new metagame. You know, I think like this is a good tier list, but I feel like there's still a bunch in flux, you know?
Yeah. So. All right. Well, I think that does it for us this week. Again, thank you everyone for liking, subscribing, commenting, all that stuff. Comment below what you think is out of place on this tier list. I'm actually pretty interested to find out. That'll do it for us this week. Thanks for watching, everybody.